Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Choir Fam Podcast.
I'm Dean Leithy, the Director of Choral Activities at Washington State University.
And I'm Matthew Myers, the Associate Director of Choral Activities at Washington State University.
Back in 2021, we yearned for more connection with choral colleagues we had not seen in months or years and sought out ways to bring our choral community together. We started this podcast to spark more conversations about the current state of choral music and what it will look like in the future.
So here we are. We bring guests from the worldwide choir fam onto the show to share their wisdom and help make our choral world a little bit closer. We hope that by listening to each guest's story, you can find interesting tidbits of knowledge and fresh ideas that you can use in your day-to-day rehearsals.
We also hope that our conversations about the current issues in our field will help us all to move the choral art form forward and make its role more prominent in our society.
We hope you'll enjoy these conversations as we work to strengthen our choral community. Welcome to the Choir Fam.
Good morning, Dean. How are things going today?
Things are going well. I'm excited about some rehearsals coming up today. We are have a concert coming up, a small concert here. We're preparing for that, which is really exciting. I have some seedlings for those. Well, Matt and for Josh that can see here in my office over this shoulder. I got some seedlings, and so it's that time of year. It's in the office now because, yeah, in the house, I'm afraid Dexter, our dog, might just kind of tear into them. So right now, they're in my office. I get to see the seedlings grow every day. And so that's nice to see. So how you doing, man?
Yeah, I was thinking that's just like the growth of our students. You can see just a little bit more understanding and knowledge of the music every day. The seeds are growing. Okay, I'll be done being cheesy for a second, but yeah, no, things are great. What I like about some of these lower key performance opportunities is that we get to experiment a little bit with our positions. You know, sometimes we'll perform in places without risers. You know, so we have a good excuse to just try out a few different options, see what's going to work for the students, and sometimes that works better than our traditional standing in rows position. So. Yeah, I love this time of year as we're getting closer and closer to polishing and, yeah, really refining what the music's about. So, yeah, that's cool.
So, Matt, you were kind enough to invite our guests today. Would you like to tell our audience how you know them and why you've brought them here?
Yeah, so Josh and I went to LSU together to get our DMAs in choral conducting. So Josh was a third-year graduate student when I was in my first year. So we overlapped just that one year, but I got to sing in his final recital and learn from him what it's like to be writing a dissertation and applying for jobs and do all of that stuff. So he was one of the first people to show that striving period for all of us. And yeah, it's been great to see the wonderful work he's been doing since then as a college professor in Tennessee and North Carolina. So so glad to have him here on the show.
So for those of you that don't know Josh, here's just a little bit more about him. Josh Chaney, a native of Fayetteville, North Carolina, is the assistant professor of music and director of choral activities at Gardner-Webb University in Boiling Springs, North Carolina. He is responsible for the leadership and administration of the GWU choirs, to include the direction of concert choir, men's chorale, handbell ensemble, and the worship ensemble. Josh also teaches courses in conducting, voice, and guitar. In addition to his work in teaching, Josh currently serves as the interim music minister for the First Baptist Church of Asheville, North Carolina. In this role, he participates in worship planning and leads the adult choir in rehearsal and worship. Josh is an active performer and has sung professionally with the North Carolina Master Chorale Chamber Choir, Bel Canto Company, the Redshift Choir, and Coro Vocati. Josh is a regular clinician, adjudicator, and presenter, having directed honor choirs, adjudicated choral festivals, and given lectures at professional conferences throughout the South. Previous appointments include service as the Assistant Professor of Choral Music at Lee University in Cleveland, Tennessee, the Assistant Director of Music and Worship at the First United Methodist Church of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and the Choral Music Educator at John M. Moorhead High School in Eden, North Carolina, and also the Choral Music Educator at Harned Central Middle School in Anger, North Carolina. Josh holds a BA in Music Education from Campbell University, the MM in Choral Conducting and Church Music from Mercer University, and the DMA in Choral Conducting from Louisiana State University. Josh is married to Rebecca Cheney, who serves as the Director of Annual Giving at Western Carolina University in Colloe, North Carolina. Joshua and Rebecca reside in Asheville, North Carolina.
So, Josh, thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Choir Fam.
Thank y'all for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, Josh, how are things going today? What is it like over in North Carolina these days?
Oh, my gosh. Before we started recording, we were talking about fall spring and how it's cold today. And it wasn't cold yesterday, but it's about 35 degrees colder today than it was yesterday. And we're wrapping up week 13. Today's a Thursday. We're wrapping up week 13 of 16 weeks. And so all of the things are about to happen. Choir concerts, band concerts, orchestra concerts, recitals, recital hearings, juries. And so everybody's just like holding on to the edge of the shaking cart.
Yeah, I feel you. That is, it's that time, is it?
Oh my God. Absolutely it is.
So, Josh, at the beginning of each episode, we always ask our guests the same question. And the design of this is for it to go wherever you'd like it to go. So, how did you fall in love with choral music?
Oh, my gosh. So, I, like many, I think it turns out, I grew up a band guy. And I went to a smaller high school. I went to a private K-12 institution. And we had choir through about seventh grade. And then the lady who was the choir director, she had a child, and she decided to take a 7-year break from school. And so there is no 14th grade. And so that meant there was no choir for me through the remainder of my time at that institution. I stayed playing in band, loved music all through high school. I'm a clarinetist. When I went to undergraduate, I went for music education, instrumental music education, and would go to the choir concerts and, you know, was fine with them and had a big time watching my friends. And I thought about joining choirs for a couple years, and then there were kind of two straws that broke the camel's back, one of which was that I was dating a girl at the time who was in the choir and knew that if I joined up, I would get to hang out with her more, and the piece that for me just really was like, nah, we're about to do this. Campbell University Choir in the fall of 2007 on their fall concert sang Eric Whitaker's Cloudburst, and oh boy, did it blow my mind. And so those two things kicked me into singing in choir in the spring semester of 2008, and I really never looked back. I always loved being in band, but even though I was an instrumental music education major, really never had any intention of becoming a band director. My goal actually was to head to like a clarinet performance program and start to hopefully work in orchestra or that kind of thing. And even took an audition with the North Carolina Symphony at one point, and started a master's degree in clarinet performance. But while I was in that clarinet performance master's degree, I really learned that, this choir thing that I've been doing the last couple years, I sang for 3 semesters at Campbell, and I sang for 2 semesters at the University of Tennessee with Gene Peterson, who was there at the time, and with Angie Beatty, who is still there now. I sang in those choirs and just absolutely loved what was going on. Fell in love at Campbell with the environment, with the emoting, with the style, with the everything. And I found that when I was in Knoxville at the University of Tennessee, I had zero interest in being in the practice room alone with my clarinet, and I had a lot of interest in being in the rehearsal room with the other choristers. And so when the time came at the end of my year at Tennessee, I knew that I did not want to be doing clarinet performance anymore. And I looked at a couple of different graduate programs in choral conducting to include Tennessee. And the place for me ended up being Mercer University down in Macon, Georgia. And so I went down to Mercer and studied choral conducting and church music there. And I've come from a religious background, and Campbell is a Christian liberal arts institution, and so is Mercer. And so the opportunity to do both choral conducting and church music just felt like a good way to immerse myself in choral music as much as humanly possible during the time that I was there down in Macon. And that led me into my first teaching opportunities following my time at Mercer. I'm a native North Carolinian, and so luckily, after I finished my bachelor's in instrumental music ed from Campbell, and so I had a teaching license. And in the state of North Carolina, a teaching license in music is music, K-12. There is no specification beyond that. So there's no instrumental license. There's no vocal license. There's no elementary or middle grades or high. It's all K-12 music. And so following the master's, where that's where I really learned how to be a choral musician, was in Macon. And I felt prepared to come back home and to teach choir instead of teaching band after that experience. And I was lucky enough to get a position at Harnett Central Middle School, which is just down the street from Campbell. My fiance at the time was finishing her master's at Campbell, and so it was good for me to be in the area. We were able to be close again after 3 years of doing the long distance thing. And so I spent my first year teaching at Harnett Central Middle School, which is a prototypical middle school experience, a school of about 1,400. We were super blessed and were able to have a pretty large program with two teachers. I kind of functioned as an assistant director, which is exceptionally rare in North Carolina for there to be two choir directors at one school. And so we had a program of about 250 and had about six choirs. And I did that for a year. And then my wife and I were married at the end of the, gosh, it must have been that we got married in 2013. So it must have been the 12-13 school year. That was the year that that I was at Harnett Central. And my wife took a job with Wells Fargo in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And the position that I was able to get there was just north of Greensboro in a town called Eden. It's about 5 minutes south of Virginia. And there was my first high school teaching experience. I taught at Moorhead High School, which is a name for a very famous governor who worked in North Carolina back in the day. And that was a very interesting place to be. Moorhead is in a smaller town. Eden is a small town. It's a mill town. And I was the third choir director in 50 years at Moorhead High School. I followed a woman who had been there for 15 years, who followed a man who had been there for 38 years. And so even though this place was smaller and the budget was not massive and, we weren't going to be going to France or anything like that, but there was such a steeped, rich tradition of singing at that school, wonderful auditorium space. It was so cool to get to teach kids whose parents would come around who had sung in the program, and some of them whose grandparents would come around and who had sung in the program and were very invested in what I was doing and trying to, lean into the lives of the students in choirs in Eden, North Carolina. I fell in love. I guess I'm answering many questions at once. I hope that's okay. And my time at Moorhead, unfortunately, was shorter than I originally intended. I was hoping to teach there for about 5 years at the minimum. It ended up being two. My wife really needed a job change, and we had talked about that the next time that, that we would move was for me to go to graduate school. And so we thought, okay, well, if that's the plan, well, then why don't you apply and then we'll just see what happens. And I had always thought that I wanted to work in university choral setting. My experience at Campbell and my experience at Mercer and at Tennessee, even though at Tennessee it was a little shorter, radically impacted my life. And the idea of getting to maybe do that with other folk who were in that same time period, the 18 to 22, I like to use those numbers as a good just kind of like building block. I just kind of felt called to it, honestly, and kind of is not it. I felt called to that. And so you know, if we were going to move and if it was going to be sooner than we wanted, well, then it was going to be to try to go to graduate school. And so applied at in a number of awesome places and was blessed to be accepted in a couple of different places. But we chose Louisiana State University. And I would choose it again and again and again and again. Go Tigers. And so we moved down to Baton Rouge. My wife started working in development at LSU, and I spent 3 years there and finished the DMA in choral conducting in 2018, and have since then been doing university choir work for a couple years in Tennessee, and then now back home in North Carolina. I got 3 weeks left on my fourth year here at Gardner Webb, and so that's kind of my path, I guess.
Yeah, that's great, Josh. You gave us so many of the questions that we had prepared for us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, we love to let you talk. So, great. Can you tell us a little bit about the differences of teaching all of these levels? You know, middle school versus high school versus college. They're all students. There are so many aspects of choir that are the same for everybody. But how do you reach the different ages that you've worked with and make sure that they connect with the music?
You know, I think the big differences are really just that those different kinds of folks need different things. I don't know that I've ever had this assumption, but I think maybe some people have the assumption that college folks, like, they're all adults and they have no problems. And yes, my students are adults in the legal sense, and I think they're adults in the other sense beyond just that. But they still have needs, right? And I think what middle school kids needs are different than college kids, and I think high school kids needs are different than other those things. And so for me, really, the answer to figure out how to meet those needs is the same regardless of who you're working with. Is that you got to get to know them, you got to know your people, and I don't think that students are just an age number. Like, there's a bunch of 18s at my school, and there's a bunch of 19s at my school, but that's not the only thing about them. Kind of the same thing as some of them are from the same town. Some of them are even from the same high school. But like I got four kids from a school called Lincolnton High School here in North Carolina. They all sing with me right now. And all four of them kids are all the same age. They're all freshmen. They're all 18, maybe 19 now. But they need different things from me based off of who they are. And so I would think that, you know, if people are looking on how to meet the needs of their folk, well, you got to get to know them. You got to know their name. You got to know their story. You got to know who they are and why they're doing what they're doing and what it is that they need from you. And so I definitely think that I learn every day more about how not just to be what college age singers need, but what college age singers at Gardner Webb need. What college age singers at Gardner Webb in the 23-24 school year need. Because quite honestly, what my students need in 23-24 is way different from what they needed from me in 2021. I came here in fall 20, and what they needed from me in fall 2020 was way different from what they need from me in spring 2024, you know? And so, man, you just got to know your folk. You got to know them.
Now, a little bit about the different types of degrees that you've had. So instrumental music ed, church music, choral conducting. I know that you take aspects of what you've learned from each one of these degrees in your teaching today, but how has your teaching been informed specifically by instrumental music ed, specifically by church music? What are some aspects of those programs that influence the way that you teach that maybe a choral-only background would not have given you?
You know, man, I think instrumental music ed taught me to focus on technique. In vocal music, solo or group, the instrument is within the body, and there's all of that kind of emotional, social, spiritual, psychological stuff that goes into all that. But it's also an instrument, and there is objective language with which we can communicate regarding that instrument. And I think coming from an instrumental background, both in high school, where all I did was, you know, play clarinet, and then in my experience at Campbell, playing clarinet and playing upright bass and playing a percussion ensemble, and what the directors of those groups would talk to us about was about how to specify our technique in order to create a higher amount of excellence, if you will, or a larger amount of excellence, whatever you want to, however you want to delineate that. And so I would say that probably my biggest informing of that is to talk about the technique, you know, and to be specific about what you want them to change when you critique something. I will stop and ask my choir, especially in the learning phase of a thing, regardless of what they're, whether it's an auditioned ensemble of a, you know, three-quarter music majors, or whether it's a non-audition ensemble of one-quarter music majors, you know, in the first couple weeks of a song or a rehearsal cycle, you know, I might let them sing through a thing, and I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to let them use the tools they already have to try to do better. You know, like what I try to do is to talk to where they actually need me in regard to their technique, rather than preach at them about, oh, well, you need to do this, and this on a second read when they're sitting there going, just like, dog, just let me do it again. I'm going to get it this next time, you know? And so, instrumental music education, learn to talk about reading, learn to talk about technique, focusing on a specificity of detail of rhythm. Not to, you know, lambaste the vocal choral. We're not as good at rhythm as the instrumental people are. I think there's more than one aspect to that. But I think part of it is that sometimes we don't train as much as I got taught on rhythm, you know. I'm a woodwind player, so I grew up playing clarinet, and you play it with all 10 fingers. And the things that you can do in regard to dexterity of rhythm with 10 fingers is more than you can do with two vocal folds, at least in my experience, especially at the college level, especially at the high school level. And so I try to talk about technique of rhythm and how to make those different kinds of things happen. You know, right now we're doing Durafle Requiem because we're going to sing Durafle in France this summer. It's going to be awesome. And some of what's eaten my folks up about Durafle is when they don't have the same rhythm at the same time, when it's not in homorhythm straight up and down. And so then they have to do little syncopations or when the meter changes, and, talking about how they approach that technique wise with their instrument. I learned that from instrumental music education. In regard to church music, I would imagine there's more application for church music in what I do at my specific institution. Gardner Webb is a Christian school. It's a liberal arts, independently Baptist institution. And so we have students who are traditional worship majors. We have students who are contemporary worship majors. We have students who might even be a BA, but they want to go into church work later in the future. And so even though we have a person on faculty who is a full-time person, who is the church music studies person, the fact that the DCA also has engagement with that world, I think the networking of it is a big deal for our students. I think the being able to talk about hymn tunes and the history of those different kinds of things, maybe a musicological aspect of something, at a school like Gardner Webb, where we can engage with aspects of faith in a more specific way than one would in a public institutional setting, we can kind of lean into some of those things. You know, if we're sitting in, oh my gosh, if we're singing the Durafle Requiem, which has texts that pull from specific places in Scripture. That, you know, oh, well, this passage is hearkening to something from the Psalms. This passage is hearkening to something from Isaiah. Let's talk about what Isaiah is about and what that meant at that time, and now how that informs this text, and how does that inform Durafle. And so I suppose in a way I deep dive a little bit into the Christianity of it at Gardner Webb in a way that I wouldn't if I worked at a public school, in regard to connecting that to my students' faith lives. And not every student at Gardner Webb is a person of faith. Or if they are a person of faith, some of them are not people of faith who practice Christianity. They might practice something else. But what I do in that situation is also, you know, a kid who comes to a Christian school knows they're going to come in contact with Christian stuff. And so I lean on that background coming from a place like Mercer, which is also a Baptist liberal arts institution, much like Gardner Webb, and use that to inform my teaching, because my thinking is that if a Christian kid comes to a Christian school, then they want to hear about it from that Christian perspective leaned in. And I do my best with students who are either not of faith or they are of a different faith to still give them that same information, because to me, it isn't up to me to take that from them in this environment. They, you know, they chose to come here. And so that makes me feel like that they want to engage with that. And usually what I do in talking about more heady kind of religious or doctrinal stuff in regard to music and how it was informed by a church music degree, it's just kind of broach with the kids. Hey, how much of this do you want to talk about? Oh, you really want a deep dive because you're huge into this. You're a traditional worship major. Cool. Let's talk about it. Oh, you just want to touch that. And then when you've had enough, you've had enough. Cool. We'll move on. And that's kind of, I would say those degrees inform me in that way.
We pop back to the choir and rhythm business.
Yeah. Yes.
Because I have also certainly felt sometimes that my students are lacking in some rhythmic energy. Now, we're doing a Renaissance chanson yesterday, and it just supposed to be 60 beats per minute, and it gets down to like 42 by page 3. What are some of your specific techniques that you use to help your singers to perform with better rhythm?
Man, breath, body movement, consonant clarity. I think when we breathe in time, we have a better chance of singing in time. I think when we breathe in time together, we have a better chance of singing in time together. I work a lot with kids, not just in choral music, but also in voice lessons about, listen, rhythm needs to inform what we call the basic definition of music, sound and rhythm. And so if it's one of two essential characteristics, then it needs to be a part of our fundamental relationship with the thing itself. And so you got to be keeping pulse in your mind, in your body somewhere. I'm a let them move while they sing type of person. And I need that motion to be informed by their musicality and by their artistry. So I'm not talking about like static, you know, I mean, the folk who are going to listen to this ain't got a video, but y'all are looking at me right now. Y'all seeing what I'm doing right now, this back and forth nodding, or I'm even going to stand up. I got a kid who does one of these a lot, you know? And for those of y'all who can't see, I'm doing the arm thing that the kids do. And if you know, if you've directed choir for a little bit, you know what the arm thing is. And that kind of static motion to me isn't the same thing as a relationship with pulse. And so breathing in time based off of an intentional building block relationship with pulse allows us to start together in time. And so we're starting at 60. Well, that means we got to breathe in 60. And if we're not breathing at 60, because every time a rest comes around where it is that we're going to breathe, even if it's a built-in one that we built into a Renaissance piece, that means the kids don't got a relationship with that pulse. And it's almost like they cease connection with the thing when there's no sound coming out of their mouth. And that's not how music works. You got to be in it like a river the entire time. And like whether you're swimming or not, whether you're moving or not, it's like the rhythmic engagement starts, I think, with mental connection, with bodily connection via intentional breath. What did I say after that? I said breath and then something and then consonant clarity. Let me think about it for a second. Well, let's just talk about consonant clarity. I find a lot of times, y'all, that my singers, the rhythm gets real mushy on something, especially if there's aspects of it that increase in difficulty. The homorhythm is gone. There's black notes that have more than one flag on them, you know, and we start looking at stuff like that. They can't hang those things in part if that relationship with pulse isn't there. But then also, I think people give a lot of rhythmic assistance to each other in your own section and to the other sections by with consonant clarity. And so, you know, if we're singing something like "Kyrie Eleison," if that becomes "Kyrie Eleison" and it gets real mushy, it loses its rhythmic vitality. And so when you require them to consonantize, which I don't think is a word, but I just made it one, if they consonantize with some intentionality, then the rhythm comes to life in and of itself. And so if folk are struggling to keep at 60 when it's actually 42, having that initial relationship with pulse that then informs their bodily breath. Oh, and motion. We were talking about motion. I love when singers sing with body motion that is informed by phrase. And so, oh my gosh. Has in my mind a physical line to it. And if that physical line is informing how they live in relationship with that pulse, then that's going to come out in the body. The body is the instrument, and its intimacy with pulse as well as pitch and music as a whole. I think if that's connected with motion, that can be a good thing. You know, music moves, and bodies that make music are moving in regard to the breath motion on the inside of the thing. And so the idea that that can't translate outward doesn't work for me on an almost elemental level of thinking about making music. And so, man, if my choir was trying to get a piece at 60 and they could, and they were by page 3 on 42, we'd be talking about, are you breathing in time? Are you breathing together? Are you allowing the Victoria Omanium phrase to inform how you shape all those things? And then are you consonantizing in such a way that your partners in relationship of making this music together rather than just at the same time, that you are giving something those folks to work with?
Yeah, and absolutely. These consonants in French, it's just French that's causing it.
That's what it is.
Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. The more we get them moving, their heads are out of those music so they can just be the music, I think is great. There are two things that I want to reiterate from what you said that I think are so key to this all. One is that breath is music making. I think sometimes we think that the singing is singing, like only the sounds that come out of us are the music. But breath is part of that process. And if that's rhythmic, then that will help everything else.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think helps bands so much is marching band, is it is so much easier to walk in tempo than it is to play in tempo. You know, your Dahlcrows taught us that we can understand the beat with our body.
It's embodied. It's been embodied. And if singers get to embody, well, how do we embody? I embody with phrase, you know? And phrases aren't static. That's the rocking. That's the arm thing, you know, like that's static. That's not embodied. And we also have a thing. I ask the kids sometimes every now and again, Matt, I'll ask the kids like, hey, what's the one thing that we got that no instrument has got? And the answer to that is words, you know? And so after singing for a little while, it's like, oh, well, part of the reason that doing rhythm while you're singing is harder is because you're always, always looking at least two lines. You're always looking at least two. You're looking at the pitches and you're looking at the text. And so that's a part of it. And I had to learn, and my kids who come from band who want to sing with us, either in the in the TB choir in Gardner Singers, or whether they want to sing in concert choir, which is the SATB, you know, those kids have to learn that the relationship doesn't start with the dots on the page, like at least like it did for me playing clarinet. It's got to start with the text. Text has innate rhythm. Languages have flow. And forgive me for interrupting you, but like that's such a huge thing, man.
Absolutely. So Josh and I got to see each other a few weeks back at Southwest ACDA. And I had the joy of seeing his presentation on program administration, which was mostly geared toward new teachers. So what would be your best advice for a new music teacher? You can go through as much as you like this, but what
any direction?
Yeah, what do new teachers need to know that maybe isn't getting covered in some of their choral methods classes?
Oh my gosh, that's a massive question. I think it really it's got to have at least two fundamental answers. If I was going to give somebody a piece of advice, the first thing that I would say is you must take it one step at a time. It's got to be one step at a time. If you try to take 1 1/4 steps, you're going to trip. It's got to be one step at a time. And learning to be okay with that, I'm not okay with that yet. I've been at my school for 4 years. I'm 36 years old. And I have to tell myself every day, I should get it tattooed on myself. Take it one step at a time. Because there's going to be somebody across town or across county or across state who just has a different situation than you. And their steps are not your steps. And their day is not your day. And their school is not your school. And their students are not your students. And it's one step at a time to do what the next best thing for your people is. Which kind of leads me into probably what should be the primary focus for a new person always, 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 always. Choral programs don't exist in a vacuum. They exist in a place. And they exist in a place that serves a people. And that people group, because that place is always bigger than choir, right? And so Gardner Webb University Choirs is not meant to serve Washington State University. It is not meant to serve Louisiana State University. It is not meant to serve Mercer University. It is meant to serve Gardner Webb University. And so the first thing that you got to do is answer the question, how are my people, how is my place going to be served by choral music? And then build that. And you got to build that one step at a time.
Great. That's excellent. And how have you seen that in your various jobs? Like, what did your middle school need from you? What did your high school need? What does Gardner Webb need?
When I taught middle school, I went in and worked with the lead teacher, the head teacher. She had been there for some time, and she is still there now. And so what I think that school needed from me, and I didn't realize it when I first got there, that was my first teaching job, and I think I slowly figured it out over time, is that they needed me to support what it is that had been going on. There was good things going on in that program, and it met the needs of the people. And probably what it needed me to do was to be my best self as an extension of what her name is Susan Morrow. She is the choral music educator at Harnett Central Middle School in Andrew, North Carolina. It needed me to be an extension of what it is that she had built and established, so that the relationship that choirs had with the other fine arts, with the school as itself, and with the local community, so that it can keep being what it needed to be. I would bet that halfway through my second semester there, I only spent a year there because we got married and my wife got a job that took us away. But I think what it needed from me was to stay the course, not get in the way of the good things that were already happening, and to accentuate the good things that were happening with my skills and talents and abilities, you know, and to be a great assistant choral music educator in a program of 250 kids. I think here at Gardner Webb, when I got to Gardner Webb, it was the fall of 2020, and everybody knows what was going on in the fall of 2020. I followed a guy who had been here for 20 years. At the same time that I came in, a new choral music ed, music ed, and so my music ed guy is a choral guy. Gardner Webb is not a very large place, so we don't have an instrumental music ed and a string music ed and everything music ed. We got one music ed. And my music ed guy's background happens to be choir, so that's really nice. We both came in at the same time during the COVID years. And what Gardner Webb needed as a whole, Gardner Webb was going through it, and we're still going through it, just a massive transition to bring our school out of the 20th century into the 21st. To figure out what a rural Baptist institution in North Carolina is going to be for its people and for its region and all those kinds of things. And so I think what Gardner Webb needed from me was to figure out how do we can maintain the best things that small Baptist choirs have been across the history of that for the 20th century, while also recognizing the realities of the changing of the scene, both of choral music as well as education in North Carolina, and just the changes that are moving and shaking in the private Christian school world. How do we bring in the new of that all at the same time, while also dealing with COVID? And so Yeah, we tried to take it one step at a time here by, okay, cool, let's get in the door. The kids at Gardner-Webb voted for the fall 2020 for them to have school in person. And so all the bosses said, I don't care what your discipline is, you will figure out how to do it in person. And so I was reading freaking New England Journal of Medicine and all the books and all everything that everybody read. I read all that stuff. You know, y'all read it. And so we were, I'm looking at the field out my window right now that we were singing in. And, you know, I was hauling an amplifier outside to, you know, to have choir out in the yard, man. And we were, we did all the masks and the everything, you know, and that's what Gardner-Webb needed for me at the time. They needed me to figure out how to keep singing while COVID was happening, and how to make sure folk wasn't getting COVID while they were singing. And that didn't happen. I was exceptionally proud of the fact that we made it the 2020-2021 school year. And I had students who got COVID, but none of them got singing in choir at Gardner-Webb. And I was exceptionally proud of that. And then in the next year, it's like, okay, cool. How do we begin to come out of this COVID thing and start to rebuild our program, all while we are not allowed to recruit at a school that not recruiting is the death knell of a small institution, right? You got to be able to get out. But in North Carolina, North Carolina Department of Public Instruction, there was no going in schools during that year. And so we got real small in the 21-22 year, real small, like 12 majors small. And now we've more than tripled that number because the schools opened back up, because the whole situation shifted to more like it is now. And so what Gardner-Webb needs from me now is to be beating down the doors of every high school teacher within an unreasonable distance to try to get their kids to come and sing at our school, and to make an impact upon our communities with great singing, in a space where people who are non-majors can come and be empowered and be informed about group dynamics and seeking excellence through detail together, and to where our singers can go out and learn how to do that in a school setting or in a ministerial role. And so I think what Gardner-Webb needs from me is to continue to find the best way to make us seen.
Well, that sounds like a great plan to get your numbers up. Go out.
We're trying. I don't know if it's working, but we're trying.
Yeah. Well, Matt, I think it's a good time for a transition to our lightning round. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it. So, Josh, we have a short series of questions for you. We encourage you to answer with whatever comes to mind. So, fast answer is a good answer.
Excellent.
Don't think too hard. So, first question, are you a night or morning person?
Oh, my gosh. I think I've become a morning person.
What is your least favorite chore?
Hat box.
That's legit. If you were an Olympic athlete, what sport would you want to compete in?
Soccer.
What book or TV show would you turn into a Broadway musical?
Oh my gosh. Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire.
And if you were in the Game of Thrones musical, what role would you want to play?
Jon Snow, man, obviously. Trying to come back to life. Spoiler alert.
What is your favorite teaching trick or hack?
All right, everybody who hears this, don't be mad. Because some of y'all about to be mad. For real, y'all, sometimes folk will be singing. And even in an honor choir setting where I don't know, they'll sing or whatever, and it's bad. And it's bad because they don't care in that moment. And I will literally say, and I'm sure some people are going to be so pissed about this, but they're going to have to live with it. And I definitely say it to my students. What if you did that again and it didn't suck? And then they laugh, usually. And then they do it again, and it's better. Very often, I'll be standing in front of a group of kids, especially if it's my people, and I know that they know better. And they are choosing excellence. Excellence is a choice. There is no such thing as accidental excellence. It is only chosen. And so when you choose to be unexcellent, you're going to be mediocre at best, and you're probably going to suck. And so what's my fastest hack? What if you did that again and it didn't suck? And it never does.
Yeah, that lets you like get into specific detail instead of overarching.
There it is. That's right.
If you had to pick one favorite choral piece, what would it be?
James MacMillan, Miserere.
What is one composer you feel needs more attention?
Cecilia McDowell.
And what is your favorite memory associated with choral music?
For me, it's kind of different, whether I'm singing or conducting. And it's also different whether I'm thinking about school or whether I'm thinking about kind of like pro choir settings. So I'm going to give you three. My favorite memory of being a student singer, whether it was an undergrad, master's, or graduate, is those. I love the little moment where you are gathered with people in an intimate setting that you know is about something magical is about to happen. The first one that comes to mind is I was at Mercer, and we were fixing to sing at Southern Division ACDA in Winston-Salem in 2012. And I don't remember being on the stage. We sang the concert. I've seen the videos. I'm standing up there. You know what I remember intimately is standing in the nasty staircase in the bottom of the Stevens Center in Winston-Salem. And all of my North Carolina people know that we know the Stevens Center. That's one of our good venues in the state. And there's this red light down there, or a blue. I'm pretty sure it's red. And I was standing looking at all the people that I was with, and it was like, this is an incredible moment. I know what's about to happen on the stage, and it's going to be incredible. But right now, it's just us standing literally on top of each other as we're about to go out onto the stage. And I have lots of moments in my mind like that that are special. But that's just a good example of being a student singer. As a professional chorister, and as a person who grew up as an instrumentalist, I didn't really believe that I was a singer. I wouldn't call myself a singer until, I think it was 2018. In June of 2018, I was singing with a group called Cor Vocati, which is based in Atlanta, Georgia. And we did Considering Matthew Shepard. And those of y'all who know that piece or have sung that piece know that it begins and ends with a fully a cappella tenor-only solo that's very short at the beginning and the end. And I was chosen to sing those solos. And I remember walking out to the front of the stage. There's probably, 800 folk there. Every person on stage was a professional. Every person in the pit was a professional. Every person backstage was a professional. Every single person who wasn't performing had paid money to come in the door. And I knew in that moment, it's like, okay, Josh, you have 3 degrees. You're a choir director at a university. And now here you are doing this. It's probably okay to call yourself a singer. And it's insane that I needed that to believe it. But that was a really special moment for me that I believed that I belonged. And then as a conductor, right now, my favorite moment as a conductor was the other day we went on choir tour and we did a performance at Snyder Memorial Baptist Church in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Fayetteville is my hometown. And that was the first time that I conducted a concert in my hometown. And right now, that's my most favorite memory as a conductor.
What projects are you working on right now that you're excited about?
Oh my gosh. We're going to France in June. 16 of my singers and I and a bunch of folks are going to France to do a thing with Vox Anima London. We are going to sing the Maurice Duroflay Requiem at a cathedral in Normandy to commemorate the 80th anniversary of D-Day. And I am very much looking forward to looking at the students' faces at the beach at Normandy. I think that's going to be really special. I think it's going to be really important. And other than that, man, I'm just thinking about concerts for next year. Next year, my spring concert's going to be on Mardi Gras. And my second home is Louisiana, and I'm going to see about trying to make that pretty cool.
Love that. Well, Josh, you've made it to the end of the lightning round. If our audience would like to get in touch with you or find you on social media, how can they do that?
Please. My last name is Chaney, Cheney, not Chaney. You can find me personally on Instagram at jchaneyconductor. It's all one word. Gardner Webb Choirs is also my choir's Instagram page. That probably gets more action than my individual conductor one. Of course, people can reach me at my Gardner Webb emails and phone numbers, and all y'all know how to Google. I'll let you find that yourself. Probably the fastest way to get a hold of me would be to email me at Gardner Webb or to find me on Instagram. And I'm happy to talk to anybody about anything. I like talking.
Well, it was great talking with you today, Josh. We thank you. Our audience thanks you. And we're happy to call you a part of the choir fam.
I am blessed to be involved. Thank you, fellas.
I'm Dean Leafy.
I'm Matthew Myers.
And you've been listening to the Choir Fam podcast.
Remember to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you liked the show, please rate and review. If you didn't like the show, please let us know how we can better serve our Choir Fam.
You can follow our Instagram page at Choir Fam Pod or email us at choirfampodcast@gmail.com. If you have ideas for guests we could invite, or if you'd like to engage us to work with your choir, just send us a message.
We welcome all our listeners.
Yes, you!
To be part of our minisodes. Just look for our episode, Minisode Intro Part 3, from February 16th, 2024, and send us an email with your answers to our Season 3 Lightning Round questions.
We look forward to hearing from you, and thanks again for being a part of the Choir Fam.